I was hoping that wearing headphones, it would cut out some of the noise. Maybe I'll go somewhere else. Or I'll just mute it for now.
So I think this is probably everybody, unless if somebody joins in as an audience member, I'll admit them into the meeting. So on the agenda, I kind of put I'm hoping the easiest one first, which is the city tree ordinance, which I think we've talked about repeatedly. And you have a copy that shows the current adjustments to that ordinance based on prior conversations. And David, these amendments were determined last year, and then for a variety of reasons, we just never finished this up. And I think part of it has to do with, at the same time we adopt these amendments, we also want to adopt a resolution for the acceptable city trees, which is referenced in what's referenced in a couple of places. So I don't know if you guys had a chance to look through these, and if you have any comments, changes, or once we have the, and I think Karen had, you might have, I think has started a draft of acceptable trees.
Actually, Jan, I think, as I recall, the other Jan had said she would start that based on the consultant's report from Peninsula. I did notice that in going through this. And in that list, I don't have, but I'm happy to start it or, you know, come up with something in a week to pass by the committee. But yeah, it is referenced several times, but no, that list does not exist.
So that would be good. As a format that we've used with like the city ops committee is particularly on this one, I think that's fairly easy to do is once we kind of have a general agreement about what we want to do here, is then we would circulate any final changes to the committee by email and get a consensus on that it's ready to move forward to the city council.
Okay.
And then we would move it forward to the city council to adopt the proposed, we'd put it in an ordinance format and then move it to the city council. But ideally at the same time, it would be good to have that resolution.
Right, okay, so I'm gonna make my to-do list to draft a resolution or draft the tree list.
And David, this city tree ordinance only pertains to trees on city property. Except for the portion, I think there's a section in here.
I think there's a section that addresses trees on private property that overhang the city right away.
Right. But the tree species that we're identifying would be trees that we would plant on city property and within our right of ways. And Karen, I think it would be good to identify in the resolution which trees are acceptable for street right-of-ways and which are not.
Okay.
Because as you know, lots of people plant trees in the right-of-way that really shouldn't be in the right-of-way. You know, pretty much it's recommended they be more columnar trees versus broad overhanging trees that then have to get pruned in an unnatural way.
Right.
And you might want to look at, I think in our code somewhere, there's a right-of-way ordinance that also talks about plants being, you know, kind of spacing and stuff. But I think it might reference some trees in there. I can't remember.
Okay. I'll try to do a little looking in the, I can search like the Muni code online.
Yeah, I think it's actually listed under 1835-120.
Okay.
Which is WSMC 1202.
Okay.
So So did you guys have any concerns about what's currently proposed to be changed or any questions? Since David, you weren't present for all those discussions.
I have one question just in regards to what you were just talking about with blocking right-of-way. I know we've discussed this in the past and it's kind of been different opinions on either side, but I was thinking it might be helpful in the tree ordinance to have a point where we at least reference other ordinances that address issues like that, or have other that also address trees.
Well, we did that in here specifically in the area where it is. Again, if you look at 1835.120, and it talks about planting of street trees by adjacent properties within the right-of-way. There's a section there added that references, you know, that you have to have a right-of-way permit. And so it references the code.
Perfect.
And mainly what I was talking about, Ashley, is when it comes to the types of trees, and even then, even for that, it would be pertinent. But typically when you see the issue is sometimes, like, for example, we all love the gum tree, but that is not a tree that would normally have been put in the right of way. that tree would be in a park or something, but not along a street where it tends to grow into buildings and out into the road.
Jan, I had a question about the last paragraph, 1835.200, the penalty. And a subject to a fine not to exceed $250 plus the city's cost to restore the tree to pre-violation condition.
Right, and it's my understanding, you know, in talking to Pat, I think that, and even with you guys, is that you kind of determine what the cost of a mature tree equates to. And then, and that would be, because you're not going to be able to restore you're going to plant a big tree, hopefully.
Right, but you're not going to be able to restore, let's say, 100-foot Doug fir from the middle of the park.
No,
but I'm just wondering if maybe we couldn't reword that.
And I'm open to suggestions.
Yeah, okay, so it's subject to a fine, I guess for administrative purposes, does the city have sort of a set fine structure saying, okay, you know, it's $250, but then, and I'm sorry, I don't have the suggested wording right off the top of my head, but something that's a little bit more open and liberal in favor of a big mature tree.
Yeah, why don't you come up with something and send that to me maybe tomorrow?
Okay.
And when we recirculate this, we'll add that in.
Okay.
I'll make a note here that you'll come up, you'll draft some language and we'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, how do you objectively determine the value of a mature tree?
So there are a couple different valuation formulas that are used in the industry based on the tree size, its health, its location, and then the cost to replant a mature tree. So it really depends on the tree and where it is. And then the calculations that are done, and like Jan likes to say, with, you know, three different arborists, you'll get three different valuations. But I think if we change the wording, it leaves the city open to possibly recoup a bigger amount of money to compensate for a lost mature tree.
Would it be helpful for us to reference one of those valuations, or is it okay to just leave it open-ended like this?
Well, let me come up with a couple different language scenarios, and then you all can see what you think feels most comfortable.
Thank you, Karen.
David, did you have any questions or?
Well, I got sidetracked there for a second because I was looking at the heritage tree language, because that has some compensation relation or language as well. So I was wondering if there's some overlap or the language should be consistent between the two, at least on how that valuation of trees will be determined.
We should definitely do that.
Okay. Anyways, that was off topic. Just clerical, is the intent to replace all references to street trees with city tree? Because I found a few places where street tree still exists in here. And then city tree also isn't defined in the definitions where street tree is.
So where does it say... I think the idea is that, so I think city trees can be either street or park trees. Does that make sense? So yeah. It's both city and park trees. And so when you look at where it's used, both of the spacing and the species to be planted would impact both street and park trees. So okay. We could add a definition that says city trees, and it would just be C street and park trees.
That might clarify.
Okay.
And then I was also wondering with these ordinances, is there like a recital or some lead-in of intent? Because I was just trying to get up to speed on this, and you know, the city tree ordinance starts and it's straight into definitions and the formulation of a tree board. So it was kind of missing the intent.
This is required by our streets, our Tree City USA program. To okay. be a tree city, you have to have a city tree ordinance.
Gotcha.
And you know, you have to have a tree board, and so it never had a purpose. It might have. This is like several renditions of this.
Right.
One version was adopted. I believe Mayor Poucher didn't like that version and convinced the council to change it, or vice versa. He got one adopted and then the council, I don't know. There were several renditions because there was some disagreement about what it should or should not say.
Okay.
And so a lot of our codes don't have purposes.
Okay. I'm wondering if maybe this one should and include both the Arbor Day thing as well. I mean, if eventually you're levying fines against people for removing these sorts of things, it seems like you ought to have a clear purpose.
Yeah. Up front. I like that idea of having recitals showing the purpose. That is it's a great so idea. Cool. I think
I can look at other codes, okay. other cities' codes, and I'll pull something from another city.
Okay.
We have a lot of whereas statements in our annual tree proclamation or Arbor Day proclamation. Some of those could be borrowed.
So typically in a purpose and a code, they are not whereas clauses.
Really?
You typically see a whereas clause in a resolution. The purpose is usually just a one paragraph, or it could be two paragraphs.
Okay.
But it's typically not whereas clauses. So again, I'm sure that there are a number of these tree ordinances around the state, and I suspect some of them have a purpose.
Okay.
So I'll just go into them and see, try to find one that matches us, and I'll grab that language to start with.
Okay, that's good.
Thanks, Jan. That's good to know.
Yeah, it's always kind of confusing when we start dealing with both ordinances and resolutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have anything else, David?
No, not on this one. No.
So if we're good to go with that, I'll pull a purpose. Karen will look at the penalty and come up with a list of acceptable trees, and we'll try to get that out to you in the next week.
Okay.
I imagine that this will probably come to the city council at maybe this if possible, the second meeting in October. We'll have to notice it. I'll have to check with Ken to see if it requires a public hearing. It might. And so we'll have to notice it and get it on the agenda. But possibly at the second meeting in October. It'd be nice to get it done. And
Jan, I like the idea of looking at, you know, the purpose in another ordinance from somewhere else in the state, another tree ordinance. The thought also occurred to me, do you think it would be worthwhile to borrow any of the language from our tree, what is the report that we got from Pioneer?
Well, this is a very succinct paragraph. Mm-hmm. It's not a book. So your code, you don't want to have a really long 3-page purpose. Mm-hmm. It needs to be succinct and, you know, really, you know, what is the purpose of this code? And it's, you know, to one, you know, meet the requirements of, you know, being a Tree City USA and establishing the tree board, and then also establishing guidelines for city trees.
Okay. My thinking was just to try to make it more unique to white salmon, but maybe that isn't necessary.
I don't think so. I mean, it's gonna say white salmon in it, you know, but I think we can get too broad and too fluffy.
Mm-hmm. For an ordinance.
Yes. Okay, so the next item is the critical areas ordinance section that's titled Special Provisions Heritage Trees. The city is continuing work on the critical areas ordinance. Staff has yet to review the draft changes, which do not include any of these changes we've talked about for the last year, i.e. taking this out of the critical areas ordinance and putting it in a different section of the environmental code. And so the timing is kind of critical right now to figure out what we want to do with this section. Staff, I wrote a little bit in here, not a whole lot, but staff definitely is recommending that it come out of the critical areas because it's not a critical area. The Oregon white oaks are covered somewhere else in the critical areas. I mean, we could certainly still consider them a heritage tree, but they're also protected in a different section of the critical areas under habitat. The other thing that has come up is the process itself for when applicant has to come before the city council. And currently, there's really no exemptions or exceptions in this code. So you could have, you know, a very large parcel that has lots of trees on it, but where the house is going to be located is going to take a percentage of the trees out. But all of the remainder of the trees are going to stay in. And even when that happens, the applicant has to make a variance application to the city, which is actually heard by the city council and not by the planning commission. And so I know that Pat is very desirable of looking at some kind of exceptions or exemption process. I think the planning commission has raised the question of why these are going to the city council and not to the planning commission, with appeals of the planning commission's decision either going to a hearing examiner or to the full council. Not for sure how it got set up this way. I'm going to be honest. I think that in the last critical areas ordinance was adopted, there was not one staff member or the mayor realized that this was in the critical areas ordinance. And so that's why I'm being really tough about not moving the critical areas ordinance off the desk to the planning commission until it's been read by staff to make sure that they clearly know what is in the proposed code and make sure that, you know, all the processes, procedures work and aren't cumbersome both for staff and the applicants. So, you know, the easy thing to do is you just pull this section out and you create a new section without even doing any changes to it. That's the easiest thing to do. You pull it out, and at the time of the critical areas ordinance adoption, it gets removed, and you create this, you just move this to a separate code, and you do it all at one time. The next thing you want to do is, do you just want to leave it this way, or are there changes you would like to see in here? And ideally what will happen is that they'll come together. The critical areas ordinance, you know, whatever recommendations we make will go to the Planning Commission. Planning Commission will review it, make their recommendations to the City Council for adoption. And at that time, if the Planning Commission agrees, which I can't see why they wouldn't, they would recommend adoption of the critical areas ordinance and then adoption of this new code that would be the Heritage Tree Section under the Environmental Code, which is Title 18. So it'd be like 18.30 or whatever it is.
What's Chapter 18 again?
So Title 18 is the environmental section of our land use code.
Okay. And what is specifically 18.10.200 general provisions?
18.10, the total 18-10 is the critical areas ordinance. And so 18.10.317 under the critical areas ordinance is this weird section that got put into the critical areas ordinance for some reason. My suspicion is it came from another city. I know it came from another city. I actually saw this show up down in Bingen, and we removed it down in Bingen for all kinds of reasons. But we were like, why is this in the critical areas ordinance? And there are other cities that, for whatever reason, they're probably GMA planning cities that have different codes. And so it just never got reviewed by staff.
Well, and one of the interesting things about this code is that where there is a heritage tree, it creates a critical area around it.
A buffer. It creates a buffer. And one of the things that we're fixing in the critical areas ordinance, and I have to laugh hysterically because when Pat came to me about this, I said, we have a what? So the critical areas ordinance has a flaw in it. And it creates a buffer on a buffer. And I said, that's ludicrous. If you need a 100-foot buffer, you don't create a 50-foot buffer and then another 50-foot buffer. You create a 100-foot buffer. So the ordinance actually creates buffers on buffers. And I just said, that's ridiculous. It's confusing. That kind of stuff irritates landowners to know, beyond belief. And so that's actually in some tables, and it has to be fixed in the critical areas ordinance. But yes, it does create, each tree has a buffer around it. And so that's part of the problem, when you get to these larger parcels, is there like a percentage? Let's say you're asking to take less than 5% of the trees out. And maybe there's a number or something, I don't know. Is there a way to accept that out of having to get a variance? And then the other issue that comes up is you may have a smaller piece of property where there really is only one location to put the tree, put the house, and there is again a tree of whatever size in here, and that applicant now has to stop the process and apply for a variance to remove that tree. One of the things that might be to think of, and I don't know if it talks about that in here, is, and I know Ashley and Karen, we have talked about this in the past, that if a tree, particularly a heritage tree, has to be removed off of a piece of property due to construction, that there is either a 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 replacement. And then, and some cities actually require certain height and diameter of replacement trees. And so that's something to consider. I am going to throw this out there because, Ashley, I know you are interested in this. So I'm just going to lay it out there for discussion. Is I know, David, Ashley has been vocal, very supportive of protecting more than what trees that would qualify as a heritage tree. And so again, this would be the time to possibly do that if you were wanting to protect more than just the tree definitions here. I do, as I've said in the past, I think that could be harder to get past some of our council members. And I think there is a large segment of the community who will be opposed to expanding this ordinance to other trees.
And a large group of people that would also be for it.
Yes.
So Jan, I just had a couple questions about, like, if this were pulled out of the critical area ordinance, how it works. Just looking at chapter, 18, there's the critical area ordinance, SEPA, shoreline master plan, things that, mm-hmm. once you're wedged inside those, they have formal processes. So what would this look like in a different chapter? When it, would it require carving out who reviews them, all the way down to, like, you're suggesting mitigation measures, which as well are sort of embedded in critical area ordinances? And
well, I think what we would do is just label it heritage trees, and it would be like 18 point whatever, whatever number is available.
Yes.
And then ideally you would need to, I think, and I think this is what Pat wants to see, is a process that's just specific to heritage trees. Right. Like, who makes the decision on, right at the moment, if there's any heritage tree to be cut down, you have to apply for a variance. And I think it states in here, there's a process for that. I think it's in here.
And even a permit for pruning is in here.
Right. And so staff finds, has stated that they find this somewhat cumbersome. It's also it also talks about this tree inventory, but if you look at this tree inventory, it's really about and again, this ordinance is confusing.
Right.
So heritage trees include, and then there's this paragraph state that says, to be considered a heritage tree, the tree must be nominated by the landowner of the ground. But the attorney and Pat have determined that that's almost like number four, it's the paragraph should be under number three. Any tree designated as a heritage tree by the city council in accordance with the nomination process detailed below. And then that paragraph should be indented and is part of number three. It is not a standalone paragraph under heritage trees include. It's part of item number three there. So your heritage trees are Oregon white oaks, any trees with a certain diameter. And then if a property owner wants to nominate a tree as a heritage tree that doesn't meet these definitions, there's a process for doing that.
Gotcha.
So somebody may have a tree on their property that they're just in love with. It may not meet these requirements, but maybe there's some historical significance to it, or it's an outstanding example of a certain type of species, like the gum tree.
Has that occurred, or do we have a tree inventory of zero?
So there have been no nominated heritage trees. And so the tree inventory is again, this is somewhat confusing. So D is part of this, and the way it's nominated, it's here, is there's this nomination process that doesn't address one and two.
Gotcha.
So C and D,
right,
address this nominated heritage tree process.
Gotcha.
And again, this ordinance is not well written by any means, and it's confusing. Because then, you know, there's the maintenance and preservation of heritage trees. And so some landowners will argue that it's our job to go out and inventory every single tree within the city limits of White Salmon. We can't do that. It would be very costly, and I also think there would be some property owners who would say, we're not allowing you on our property. We're not going to allow you to do that. Some cities have done, you know, like what we did is we you know, inventoried all of our city trees and our trees in the right-of-way on Jewett Boulevard. We do have other trees that are within the right-of-way throughout town, and it might be helpful to know where those are located and what kind of species they are, if they need to be removed, or if we, you know, but that's another topic, I think. So I think staff is looking for some direction from the tree board on this, so that we can begin working on what this would look like, fixing the language in here, fixing the process. If you think there should be an exceptions or exemptions process, who hears the variance? Do you want the city council to be the appellate body, or as we're starting to do, move it to a hearings examiner?
I think it would make a lot of sense to have exceptions or exemptions written in, especially after the one variance that we did receive at city council, where it was necessary to cut down trees so that a person could actually use their property to build a home. But then beyond that, it became very confusing trying to determine which trees they could keep versus not keep after that point. It felt pretty subjective. And so I think it would be really helpful to have a map for that decision making.
So when, and I think we do require that, we require documentation that shows, you know, and I think there was, you know, a drawing that showed all the different trees. Mm-hmm. And it showed the trees that were needed to be removed. I think they did identify some trees they felt needed to be removed due to the construction process.
Right.
And I believe there was at least one of those trees, Ashley, that through a motion of yours, that tree was maintained. And it does become subjective. You know, there are property owners who, it's challenging because you may have a property owner who wants a 3,500 square foot house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereby if they built a 1,500 square foot house, they may have to cut down less trees or no trees. So then it's like a 1,500 square foot house gives them reasonable use of their property, but they may have bought the property, you know, it may sit on the bluff or or it's on a hillside where they're trying to get a, you know, a larger home. It may afford a view. and so I think trying to take as much subjectivity out of this as possible would be the best thing to do. But I think that's somewhat challenging too.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful to look at some other codes from a few other cities that have tight restrictions on building and protections for trees, just to look for examples and what they've done.
Well, what we can do is, and I can push staff on this, is to actually maybe come up with, in a month, to come up with some potential revised ordinance. That basically takes the intent of this ordinance and puts it in a different format, makes it clear, a clearer process, and then you know, maybe give some options for exceptions or exemptions. I guess one of my questions is, what do you think about if someone's asking for a variance of this? Typically, all variances from city land use codes go to the planning commission. And I think the feeling is here is that this it is part of the land use code, it's part of the environmental section. And the planning commission, except for this, hears everything else. and actually that might be an issue in all the critical areas. A variance of maybe all critical areas go to the city council, and they really should be going to the planning commission.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes sense to send it to the Planning Commission. I think specifically with more clarity on how to make decisions in this area.
Criteria.
I agree.
And then what do you think about appeals? You know, our staff is, you know, pro hearing examiner use. It moves some of that subjective, you know, if an appeal's made to the city council, it takes some of that subjectivity away from you guys. It also does allow you somewhat to have a little more interaction with the public about these issues, because then you're not ever making the planning, you're not making a decision on it. You know, that came up with, what was the last thing we talked about? We're moving something to a hearing examiner. So, it's the cell tower stuff. If it comes on,
yeah,
you know, if it goes before the planning commission for a cell tower, it'll go to a hearing examiner.
So, are you suggesting that if there's a variance, to just send it directly to a hearing examiner? Oh, just if
that
there's
would just
an appeal.
Be the appeals.
Okay.
We typically, I mean, some cities use a hearing examiner for everything, and then that's appealed to like the city council, or in some cases, they won't even appeal it to the city council. They say you just need to appeal it to court.
Okay.
And I think we're the planning commission wants to be involved. And they, I don't think at this time it's something the city should be considering, except for appeals.
So alternatively, if the planning commission made a decision and that was appealed, then would it go to city council?
So if with the hearing examiner, if I made an application to the planning commission and I didn't like their decision, I would appeal it to, it would go to the hearing examiner. If the hearing examiner upheld the planning commission's decision, I would then have to appeal it to court.
Okay.
And that's the way it would be with a city. If it went from the planning commission to the city council and the city council upheld the planning commission, then it would have to go to court.
Mm. David, what are your thoughts?
It doesn't add any other steps.
I kind of like the planning commission takes the initial hearing and then it goes to a examiner. Because for, I think Jan has a valid point. It sort of frees the council up to actually hear from individual landowners and weigh whether, you know, a broader legislative mm-hmm. fix is necessary. So, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Cleaner.
And I'll just ask who is or who are the hearing examiners?
So typically a hearing examiner is appointed by the city council through a professional services contract. It's usually somebody who has broad experience in hearing. They're typically an attorney and they have a broad experience in hearing and participating in land use decisions. And so we currently have one on contract that we've used one time. We're probably going to be proposing, we have an ordinance that allows the city council to designate the use of a hearing examiner when requested by staff. But the city council has also expressed interest in seeing our codes just say, we'll use the hearing examiner. So again, it's not just Joe Blow planning consultant. It's typically someone who has a lot of experience with appeals and from planning commission decisions.
I mean, it's kind of a pseudo judge, which I think is a nice objective. So it's just, if it's getting appealed from the planning commission, it's going to be pretty loaded with emotion, and just transferring that to the city council, I'm not sure results in the best decision.
Most land use attorneys, Karen, love it when it goes to a hearing examiner. They feel like it takes out the emotion of the city council. It takes out those emotional, sometimes decision-making aspects that just are inherent when you have 5 or 7 citizens that represent the city citizens making those decisions. There's sometimes just that inherent emotional aspect.
Sure, I would think it would take out sort of that small town aspect of it and boil it down to this is what the code says and this is what you're asking to do.
Yes, that's exactly the main reason for using a hearing examiner.
Yeah. In which case the code needs to be very clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, Jan, I would love to see this section for the heritage trees as a draft with, you know, the suggested new language or reorganization. Because when I started reading this, and again, I got tripped up by that
yes.
sentence between B and C, where it's a voluntary nomination process of landowners.
Everybody does.
Yeah, which I understand, because most cities do have a landowner self-nominating process for heritage trees.
Right.
And as a small city, we are very unique in having this really quick default catch of, oh, hey, you have a big tree on your property. It's now a heritage tree. And even though you want to cut it down, the small city government says, wait, we have all these rules about it. But at the same token, we're a small city and no one's enforcing those rules or enacting any penalties for not following the rules regarding these so-called heritage trees. So this is where we had all discussed trying to clean up this language and create something that will still help protect trees. Granted, there might be a lot of variances down the road, but also make it more workable for both staff and property owners.
Yes, because right now you're right, unless you come in with a building permit and we review the site plan, and we determined, nowadays we're requiring that site plans identify all trees that have to be removed that meet this definition. And then somebody goes out in the field and actually verifies that where they want to place the home, they've actually identified all these trees. And if they're planning, and again, if they're planning on removing any, they have to get a variance. And so there's already, It can be cumbersome, you know, to go through this process for, as of right now, for any property owner. It also doesn't address a situation whereby either a property owner does not know about this code and prior to applying for a building permit just goes in and cuts down a bunch of trees. And I know Ashley and Karen, you both have raised this concern in the past. It also doesn't address the property owner who very well knows about this code and does the exact same thing on purpose.
And, so, and it also doesn't address that if there are heritage trees that are to be preserved, how those trees are to be preserved and what are the consequences for not preserving those trees during the construction process.
Well, it does talk about maintenance and preservation of heritage trees.
Yeah, but none of that's enforced. Back to the staffing issue.
Right. And so that's something I think we have to be realistic about is like how, and I've raised this, if we're going to adopt something, we have to make sure that it's enforceable, that we have the capacity, not only legally, but resource-wise to enforce the code because it just sits there. I mean, literally until 2019, no one knew about this. Till the tree board was enacted, David, no one knew this existed. Even though it was in our code, no one knew. And then we created a tree board and they were interested in seeing all the codes about trees. And lo and behold, here's this ordinance, this code that had never been enforced. And so property owners are frustrated. We've had some areas where like literally right adjacent to, you know, a proposed short plat or subdivision, just the prior year, somebody had gone in and cut all the trees down and short platted or subdivided the land. And so now you've got a new property owner who's doing the same thing, but now they have to, you know, meet this code requirement. And so
they just have to meet the code requirement and they're still allowed to ask for a variance. It's timely and cumbersome, but it's not like a huge financial burden on them.
But it's frustrating to them because they may have envisioned developing their property one way, i.e. how their neighbor got to do it, but now because of staff becoming aware of this code, they're no longer able to do exactly maybe what they had envisioned.
Right. Well, I guess at this point I was expecting maybe to see Pat and whoever else on staff's proposed rework of this ordinance so that he and his staff can work with it and live with it.
We will get that to you in for the next meeting.
Okay.
And doing, making it much clearer, addressing some slash exceptions or exemptions, having the variances go to the Planning Commission, identifying clear criteria.
And Jan, if you can incorporate those proposed changes like you did in the tree ordinance with the strike throughs and the highlights, so we can
this
see.
May be an entire strike through.
Okay.
I'm serious. Think this ordinance needs the basics are here, but I think it needs reworked entirely to make it very clear what the city's intent is. I think this is a case where having a purpose is really critical. So we will definitely make sure there's also a purpose in here, why this ordinance exists. Because I do think that a lot of times a judge, if it ever gets to the court level, they will look at those purposes. And if somebody's challenging a specific section of a code, they will give a city council leniency because you guys are the ones that set policy. And so sort of the purpose almost outlines the very broad policy about what you're trying to do with the code. So we will get that together. I know Pat has, I don't know that he's put it in writing, but I know he's got some ideas. So I think between he and I, we can get something drafted up and sent out to you guys for your next tree board meeting. And that would lead me to my next question. This is the second Monday of the month. Do we just want to continue meeting on the second Monday at 5:30?
That works for me.
David, does that work for you?
You're muted.
Yeah, scrambling to look at the calendar. Yeah, that looks like it'll work. Second Monday.
Yeah, Monday, October 12th. That works for me.
Okay. October 12th. Okay. Well, I'll just make sure I'm back by then. I'm going to be in Boise, but we'll get it covered.
The 12th is also a federal holiday, Jan, in case.
Yeah, but the city isn't closed that day, but that's why that weekend I'm going to Boise, but I'll be back probably by 5:30. So. So it sounds like I've got some instructions. We will, within a week, get you a revised city ordinance as part of the council packet for the next meeting in October. We will have a rough draft of a new heritage tree provision. Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and if the three of you have any ideas for the other two public members, Marla would love to have some candidates so that she could appoint those two vacant positions.
Okay.
And so,
Jan, I know I mentioned I had some names for you. I need to follow up on that.
Yeah, just send them directly to Marla. But I would talk with them first, make sure they're really interested.
Definitely.
And then get those names to Marla and say that they're interested in serving. And then she'll probably want to make some contact with them. And then hopefully at a upcoming meeting, we can get those members appointed and confirmed by the council.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks guys.
Thank you, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye.